Welcome to PNC C-Speak, the language of executives, a podcast created to share the stories of the most successful, innovative, and inspirational leaders in Los Angeles. I'm Josh Schimmels, publisher and CEO of the Los Angeles Business Journal, and I'm here with my co-host, Todd Wilson, regional president of Greater Los Angeles for PNC Bank.
Josh, it's great to be here. It's an exciting time to be involved in women's sports, not just in Los Angeles, but around the country and around the world. This industry is breaking new records. In 2024, revenue for elite sports generated over $1 billion for the first time in history. At the Summer Olympics, more than 9 million people turned in to watch the U.S. women's national soccer team take home the gold, making it the most watched gold medal soccer game ever for either men or women.
It's an exciting time. I've noticed that the engagement in women's sports has been building for years, and it feels like it's at an all-time high, in particular with fan engagement. Just a few years ago, LA got its own professional women's soccer team, Angel City FC, and its popularity couldn't be higher today.
Well, today's guest is a key figure in media, sports, and communications. I'd like to introduce Willow Bay. She's a controlling owner of Angel City FC, the most valued sports team in women's sports, with over a $250 million valuation.
And beyond sports, Willow is a former broadcast journalist for major networks such as CNN and ABC News. She's also a distinguished journalist and educator whose influential career spans over three decades in both traditional and digital media. She currently serves as the dean of the USC Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism, where she's dedicated to shaping the future of journalism through innovative education and mentorship.
Willow, welcome to C-Speak.
Thank you both for having me. I'm excited to be here with you. And Todd, for a minute, I thought you were going to say, it's an exciting time to be a woman. And I was going to applaud and cheer. Amazing.
Will, you've had a diverse career that has spanned journalism, business, and now sports. What drew you to the opportunity with Angel City FC, and how has it challenged you in new ways?
Sports has been the soundtrack to my life. I grew up a sports fan raised by a dad who took his daughters not just to games, but to practices. Sadly, we were not athletes, but grew up as real fans. And then also my first significant job in media was with the NBA, co-hosting a show called NBA Inside Stuff. So my early career was shaped by sports and storytelling. Now at Annenberg, again, the soundtrack, the volume goes up, goes down a little bit, and it's certainly up right now because we have been working to position USC as an academic hub for the sports industry. I've also always, you asked about Angel City and why Bob and I were so compelled by Angel City. For me, it's one of the great sports stories of our era, and there's nothing I love more than a good sports business story. I watched the team from its founding. I took students to visit them and learn more about what it meant to create a sports startup in women's soccer. I attended games as a fan, and it's an incredibly special experience. And the opportunity to help grow this team, help grow women's soccer, and help advance women's sports was too compelling for Bob and I to pass up.
Like you, I was an early adopter on the Angel City bandwagon, brought to me by my daughter.
And, well done.
And she said, we need to learn more about this.
By the way, learning is the optimal term at the moment because, I mean, I'm really having to learn a whole new business and a whole new culture at a moment of intense and dynamic growth.
Obviously, seeing the success that Angel City had, what have you learned from their success? What does that lead you to think for the next phase of Angel City?
Angel City did so many things right. They created a purpose-driven brand where mission, vision, and values were aligned. They used sports as a catalyst for social change. They delivered an incredible game day experience. They built strong relationships with partners and sponsors. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
They built and intentionally built a community that was diverse and nurture that community. But when I think of what they really did that is so inspiring is that they just didn't set limits. They said, you know what? We really want to give women athletes the opportunity to play on the biggest stage in the country. That stage turned out to be global because this brand is local, it's national, and global. And then they elevated that experience for fans as well. They said, we want to create a business that delivers real business growth. And they opened it up to women athletes and other investors, as well as partners and sponsors, to be part of that business enterprise growth. They turned it into the most valuable women's franchise in sports. I think I've learned so much from them about not setting limits. Set your aspirations high and see just how far you can go. And it has, in the case of Angel City, exceeded expectations.
Well, the entire ownership group since the beginning has been really impressive. For those of us who live here in Southern California, we know that Angel City is much more than just a sports team. It's something that is redefining the business of sports. You've already disrupted the status quo in a lot of ways. How do you plan to continue disrupting the traditional sports business model? What does that look like?
You know, I think about it in some ways, less is disrupting, instead creating new norms and standards.
You know,
what does it mean to provide women athletes with everything they need to excel? Whether it's a training facility designed for them, a beautiful stadium to play in that allows fans to cheer them on to their fullest capacity, to really empower them to succeed on the pitch and off. We need a new normal here. And I think that's, to me, as important as disrupting what's come before us.
When I hear you talk about Angel City, it seems to me it's much more than just football. And it can go beyond here, both domestically and internationally. How do you think about kind of where else can it go?
So I think Angel City set out to provide equity for women on and off the pitch. That's a pretty powerful statement to make. When you build a business that's the ultimate purpose-driven brand, and your purpose is aligned with your execution, the sky's the limit on where we can go.
You mentioned equity. Although there's been significant investments in women's sports over the last few years, and a new franchise I know just came out in Denver, which was an unbelievable price, investment's still well behind men's sports. What needs to change in women's sports to reach this commercial potential? And how does this evolve over the next several years?
Yeah, I think we really need to do a better job of communicating the value proposition of women's sports. From a commercial standpoint, when you think about the women's sports audience, they're young, they're diverse, they're educated, and they have money to spend. Yet only 6% of Fortune 500 companies spend dollars in women's sports. The other 94% may want to pay attention to this. And then there's some unique characteristics to this market, which is, you know, women's sports audiences overall are more likely to buy products from a sponsor of their team. 32% more likely. That number goes up if you just isolate the women purchasers.
Right.
That number goes up to 44%. When you think about women athletes, they're gifted at making connections with fans. And guess what? They're more successful at driving purchases as well. 2.8 times more successful.
That's amazing. So beyond financial investment and even beyond the balance sheet, what are some of the biggest barriers that we see women's sports still face?
I think there are a lot of old notions of women's sports. Women's sports are not a little version of men's sports. They're a unique entity and experience a period of accelerated growth in a very different cultural context, in a very different media context. I think when you think about barriers, lack of investment has been one of them. And we see it clearly in the infrastructure and media coverage. A small fraction of sports coverage is dedicated to women's sports.
During March Madness, I saw there was a collegiate athlete, and I can't remember her name, but she did a social media experiment where she followed the teams around and showed the difference in facilities, in treatment, in the men's tournament versus the women's tournament. Even things like using the name March Madness, not allowed in the women's tournament at the time. And I think it was really eye-opening. How do we change that down the road? Is it just about marketing and exposure? Is it talking about it more?
It's interesting. The ratings for the women's game have been growing for years, and each year they set a new record and a new benchmark. And even this year, as, for example, the WNBA season unfolds, those ratings are holding firm. So it was not just a Caitlin Clark phenomenon. Audiences are telling us they're interested and they want more, and we need to be listening more carefully to that.
I also think it's evolving into other sports. I mean, I'm sure you've seen there was 90,000 people at the volleyball
game. Yeah, volleyball.
Right between Nebraska and Iowa, I think, in a full football stadium. It is growing throughout all of sports for sure. Switching directions a bit off of sports to your day job.
Uh-huh.
You are the dean of the USC Annenberg School of Communications, where you're trying to shape the next generation of journalists and media professionals like yourself. This industry is constantly evolving as well. How do you see your role there as a leader in media?
It's funny that you mentioned volleyball because two of our superstar students, the Norse sisters, play for the volleyball team and occupy an enormous amount of of time and resources at the Annenberg School, which we love because they do their podcast in our studio. I actually see that connection between women athletes and women as media personalities and content creators. This generation really inspires me. And when I think about my role, I think my role is really to teach, train, and inspire the very best to go into these fields. I mean, I care deeply about the wider communication ecosystem in the fields that we teach in journalism, public relations, and communication. We need grads and young professionals entering these industries who have real intellectual rigor, real ethical foundations, and ease and fluency with the digital technologies and tools that exist now, and a real aptitude to be able to lean in to the changes that continue to come fast and furious.
I recently visited my alma mater, which is the Cronkite School of Journalism, and had a fascinating discussion with the dean and several business journalism professors. One of the things we discussed was the changing media landscape and how the needs of the people and the way they consume media has changed today. How do you balance traditional journalism education with the growing influence of things like AI, social media, and digital storytelling, which is very different?
You know, when I think about journalism education today, media education today, I really believe it is more essential to start with media literacy. Mm-hmm. So what does it mean to be a conscious consumer of media? What does it mean to be a conscious creator, distributor, and monetizer of that content, understanding in a foundational way and bringing critical thinking skills to bear on our media ecosystem is essential. It's essential for all of us to be functioning and productive citizens, but it is foundational to any kind of journalism and communication training. And then I would say layer on to that the essence of foundational journalism training, right? There is no shortcutting the basics. Intellectual rigor, ethical grounding, accurate, timely, relevant storytelling. Now you add the contemporary layer. People need to tell stories, whether they're journalism stories or persuasive storytelling, across multiple platforms using an array of new and emerging tools. So you have to layer on that fluency and ease with technology on top of the foundational training.
Well, and I think what you're doing at Annenberg is so important because media outlets like the Business Journal and so many others across the country rely on the students coming out to be able to write, to talk, to convert content to information that readers need and trust.
It's interesting that you say that because one of the things I cared deeply about and I think is actually similar between my role at Annenberg and my role at the team is that we need to be working hard to develop meaningful and intentional partnerships in the case of our industries of practice. It shouldn't be, I have students who need jobs, you have jobs. It should be, what do these businesses need to flourish, grow, thrive, and contribute and shape our society in the way we want them to? And that has to emerge in a dialogue. We can't be siloed having one conversation in the academic space and another conversation in the industry space if we want the communications ecosystem to thrive and be a force for good the way we all want it to be.
It is interesting because Angel City has done a really good job of the mix of media and sports. Kristen Press has a podcast. Allie Riley has a very active social account. Because of salary caps, they're not making substantial money on the pitch. So they need to learn how to manage their brand and their own economic power through social media. How do you see this kind of conversion and changes impacting women's sports and even your team particularly?
You know, when I said earlier that women's sports are not a little version of men's sports and they are growing up in a completely different environment shaped by technological changes, particularly by communication technology, the rise of mobile, the rise of social, the rise of digital video, the erosion of gatekeepers, the fact that Kristen Press and Tobin can have a podcast without going through the traditional gatekeepers of institutional brands is remarkable. And then you add to that the rise of platforms, the power of platforms, the emergence of AI. So you have this technological change, and then you have a generation, Gen Z, that is consuming content, and particularly sports content, very differently. It's rare that they'll sit down and watch a whole game. They tend to snack and graze. Maybe they're getting highlights and hot takes on YouTube. Then they're going to TikTok for the cool stuff. On Instagram, they're going to follow the players. They're checking out Alyssa Thompson and Allie Riley on Instagram. And Todd, this generation of athletes, and again, women are really good at it.
Yeah, very good at it.
Understand how to use the power of their platforms to connect with their fans. And as I noted earlier, they are more likely to drive product sales if they choose to get behind a product and partner with a sponsor. This is an ideal environment for women's sports to grow up in. If you're listening to your audience, if you're following them onto the platforms, using the power of individuals, the power of your athletes to connect, all of that's monetizable.
My 11-year-old, who is a sports fanatic, very rarely will sit down and watch an entire game with me. But she knows more about every highlight there is. And I always ask her, where did you get this from? Snapchat. That's the way they're consuming. She's already seen the highlight, the post-game interviews. They get their content in different ways.
Absolutely. And we need to remember that when we're thinking about brand strategy and content strategy and marketing strategy.
She buys about every jersey that there is.
Thank you.
Yeah. So let's talk about this dual role you now have as a leader of two organizations, the Annenberg School and then Angel City FC. Talk about how that role as a leader at Annenberg has influenced your approach to leadership as a controlling owner of a sports team.
I think one of the ways that being at Annenberg has influenced me as a leader is I had to learn about listening to different stakeholders in a very different way than you do when you're a reporter. You really have to balance the needs of stakeholders in very different ways. Fortunately, the mix in the university is not that different, yeah. Right? You have your, you know, audiences and you want to over-deliver for your audiences, your fans, yeah, and community, but then you have your team, your sporting team and your business team, and they have slightly different needs as well. So I think understanding and appreciating the unique needs and perspectives of all the different stakeholders and constituencies has really helped me be more adaptable as a leader, and I'm hoping somewhat more effective. Trying, doing my best.
Let's go back in time. I'm always fascinated in understanding what helps to shape leaders, what brings them to where they are today. Reflecting on your career path, was there a key moment or maybe a couple of moments that really shaped you? And then how have those experiences influenced your decision-making today?
I think you pointed out I've had a really unusual career path. One of the things that's happened to me often since I've moved around so much is that I've been an outsider a lot and understand both the challenges and opportunities that that outsider perspective brings. I learned both the value of fresh and new, but also the value of really understanding from the inside out, the value of total immersion. So when I was hired by the NBA, I didn't have a background in basketball. I didn't really even have a background in sports media. And David Stern, then commissioner, hired me. He was my final round interview. He said, well, the TV thing doesn't work out. We're going to put you in the marketing department. But the deal I'm going to make with you in return for this opportunity is it has to be total immersion. You have to stop all the other stuff and really spend time learning the NBA. And that's exactly what I did. And I have done that at every place I have ever worked since. get under the hood and understand it. And never mind people worrying about micromanaging or doing jobs or assignments that don't quite align with the title. For me, it's become a really effective way to learn. Then when I think about the flip side of that, the value of a fresh eye and being able to translate that into innovation or experimentation. So I had the opportunity to work for Arianna Huffington and her partner, Ken Lehrer, at the Huffington Post, the intersection of editorial and business. And really what I learned from them is how to pilot things, how to take an idea, develop it, launch it before it's perfect, get feedback, and iterate. In those days, it was technology and editorial working together for the first time. You did not have the web and tech team working with your reporters and editors.
I mean, to be fair, nobody worked with the editorial team at the time.
Right. And by the way, and the tech folks were often in another town.
Yeah.
Right? Thinking about bringing that spirit of launching a pilot and then tweaking it and adjusting it as you go. I've definitely brought that into USC Annenberg. And trust me, it was not done in higher ed very much. It's really become critical to our ability to adapt and really lean into all the changes that we're experiencing in our fields and disciplines and to innovate as well.
So I know in talking to you and getting to know you, you didn't necessarily know all that much about soccer before you bought the team.
Correct.
Hopefully I'm not...
You're not outing me.
I'm not outing you. But knowing the folks at Angel City, you know, many of them played soccer professionally or in college or were athletes. How have you been able to, you know, kind of help drive this culture at Angel City?
One of the interesting things is my being soccer curious makes me just like Gen Z. There's a generation that's approaching women's sports, but women's soccer is just kind of curious. I want to check it out. I'm not the expert. I'm not the original hardcore women's soccer fans. I'm a new fan, and I'm maybe just a curious fan. How are we working with them? How are we appealing to them?
That's who you need to learn how to appeal to, right?
Right. That's essential for women's sports across all different sports right now. At Angel City, I think you might ask them because I think they're a little surprised at times to see me in the Google Doc, which I am on a regular basis. Why is Willow in the Google Doc? I think the communication and PR teams come to appreciate that I am from time to time going to be in the Google Doc, but I use Google Doc as a metaphor for are just times where you cannot understand until you get in the weeds for a little bit. And that is not to do other people's jobs. That's to learn about other people's jobs, what the contours of those jobs are, what the demands of those jobs are, and what the fundamentals are. And so I think I've done that in a variety of places, including, honestly, the soccer house. I mean, we were underinvested in that part of our business. And we knew that to support these talented athletes in a way that allows them to live up to their potential, we needed to support them more effectively.
Well, you took a real world Ted Lasso approach to ownership and investment and getting into the industry and knowing it more.
I'm laughing because my chief of staff at Annenberg made the Ted Lasso biscuits and wrapped them pink box and put a little Angel City sticker on it. And so if you go on my Instagram, you'll actually see me holding the little pink box, which was a way of announcing that Bob and I were becoming control owners.
But do you get them every day still?
I do not. Actually, I should say, thank goodness I do not.
Angel City has an amazing reputation of community engagement. How do you approach corporate and social responsibility from a business perspective?
So Angel City is a true pioneer in this regard. They built a sponsorship model in which 10% of sponsorship dollars go right into the community. That set the stage for us to engage with our community, to support our community, to understand community needs, and to align those with the interests of our partners. It's also allowed us to drive real impact. After 4 years, three of them on the pitch, we have mobilized 1,700 volunteers. We've reached hundreds of thousands of people. We've given away, thanks to help from DoorDash and Sprouts, more than 2 million meals to people who were food insecure. All in, it's well over $3 million in support to our community. I mean,
that's impressive.
Out of the gates. We didn't wait till we became solid to do that. We did that as part of our founding mission. And it's one of the most rewarding things about this job to be able to do that.
Well, I mentioned my daughter. So I have two, 11 and 16. they're both athletes. They both play sports. And I've had a chance to coach many seasons with them of both volleyball and basketball. I've gotten to see just how exciting a time this is for girls' sports. It's inspiring for me to watch the girls not just performing on the courts, but they're cheering for teams like Angel City. And then they take that energy, whether it's to the pitch, the court, or the field. There's a true sense of pride that I think has changed a lot in the last 5-10 years. How does this play into the future of all sports and sports marketing for you? What do you think that is?
In a world that is fragmented, in which our attention spans are short, sports is not just retaining, but growing in its power to bring people together. We need to be listening to what your daughters are telling us, that they're proud of what they're seeing on the field, on the pitch, on the rink. It's bringing them joy. Let's make sure we are using that joy, that pride, to fuel the growth of women's sports.
Absolutely.
I would argue that not only the growth of women's sports, but one of the statistics that I find most fascinating is the correlation between women who participated at a high level in sports and those who ended up being C-level executives or running companies. My daughter was a high-level club soccer player and now wants to own the business world and be an executive. How do you plan to continue pushing the boundaries for women? Leadership, sports, media, business, education. How does this correlate from women's sports into ultimately the boardroom?
Can you see, can you hear that I am beaming right now? Because
well, beaming,
that's my favorite.
Well, yes.
That's one of my favorite statistics to share with people, that incredible correlation from playing sports at a competitive level to success in business and particularly in the C-suite. I think about pipeline all the time. I still have students that come to me and say, I know it's so hard for women to break into sports. I want to be able to say, no, it's not. There are 5 job openings right now on LinkedIn. Go get them. Go apply for those jobs. So I think deeply about both a pipeline of talent on the pitch and the pipeline of talent off the pitch, because we are going to need that to power the growth we anticipate across the women's sports ecosystem.
So Willow, it's been great to get to know you better today and learn more about your journey as a reporter, as a dean, and ultimately as an owner.
Todd, thank you for being a season ticket holder. I'm getting really good at thanking my season ticket holders, as I should. What do people need to know? Just come and try a game. You will be blown away by the overwhelming feeling of joy in that stadium, watching these extraordinary athletes on the pitch. You will feel extraordinary connection to the community of fans and friends and partners that we have built in doing so. And at a time when connection matters more than ever, you'll feel that. And while it's certainly true at Angel City games, USC women's basketball games, it's true at the LA Sparks, it's true at Gotham FC. So I would say for anybody who's sports curious, come give us a try.
Will, thank you so much for being here. I want to thank you for inspiring all of our daughters in the area of women's sports and business. I want to thank you personally for inspiring me in the world of journalism. It's been an absolute pleasure to meet you. Thank you for being here today.
Amazing.
On behalf of the Los Angeles Business Journal and PNC Bank, thank you all for listening. To ensure that you are notified about our future podcast releases, please be sure to subscribe or follow. Thank you all again. We look forward to hosting you on the next episode of PNC C-Speak, the language of executives.